SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Scott Wetzel and Ben Stevens.
We are live right here on Football Full Circle in the middle of the week on FFC all across the Sports Grid Radio Network. He is Scott Wetzel. I am Ben Stevens. Scott, we are on game day eve once again in the NFL as we look forward to week number four and some college football conversation more than likely happening here at the end of this hour up until 1 p.m. Eastern. Scott, as we get ready for week number four, of course, Wednesday, that important day in the NFL calendar, we find out practice reports. We find out about availability, injuries from the week prior, who is ready to go for week number four, and some news, Scott, just before we signed on here at Football Full Circle. The Indianapolis Colts will have Anthony Richardson back at practice. The young rookie quarterback will be out there today, but still remains in concussion protocol. As the Colts get ready for week number four, Scott, Indianapolis does take on this upcoming Sunday at home, the LA Rams. Right now, a very short point spread, a point and a half in favor of Indy.
Yeah, it's amazing, right? I mean, the Indianapolis Colts could be 3-1. I mean, a lot of people didn't think they were going to win three games all year, but they have a chance. It's a very winnable game right against the Rams at home. I'd be a little surprised. It's kind of weird, right? If you can't play, if you're in concussion protocol, what are you doing on a practice field? And that doesn't make too much sense to me. You know, just being a Dolphin fan and living through it so often with Tua Tags, you would think he'd be away from everybody. But that said, I wouldn't fool around with Richardson. I would be extra cautious. So, and then we saw Minshew play very well last week, being able to win in Baltimore. So I'd be surprised if Richardson played this week.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see, Scott, right? Gardner Minshew was really, really good last week. Fills in that veteran experienced quarterback role. Of course, they get a victory in overtime, courtesy of the field goal kicker, Matt Gay. Four field goals made from 50 or more yards on Sunday, getting the better, in fact, of probably the best kicker in the last decade in the NFL, Baltimore's Justin Tucker. I would love to see Anthony Richardson play, Scott. I think he's looked great so far. Three rushing scores, tied for the third most, in the NFL so far this year, but we'll see exactly how this all plays out. I think concussion protocol, Scott, is still monitoring and following along with how you are cognitively getting ready for a new week, but you can practice throughout certain junctures if you are passing certain benchmarks to be out there. Doesn't mean you're ready to go. Doesn't mean you're ready to play for an actual NFL game, but certainly at the quarterback position when you're not taking hits, if you're not wearing pads, you're okay during practice. And Scott, I think you bring up a great point about Indianapolis, huh? 2-1. They got the best record right now in the AFC South. All three other teams are 1-2. The Jaguars remain the favorite, Scott, in the AFC South, around a plus 135 price, a full dollar in front of Tennessee and Indianapolis. But I think that's really concerning, Scott, for the Jags. A 1-2 start this year. They didn't look great in that opening weekend victory over Indianapolis, by the way. Sure, the result's going to say 31-21, a double-digit victory, but they did not cruise to a 10-point margin. They had an opportunity against a lifeless Chiefs offense to take advantage on their own home field. Their offense even more lifeless, only putting up 9 points against KC week number two. And last week, Scott, as a 9.5-point favorite, 8.5-point favorite at certain times against the Houston Texans. They lost by 20. They lost by 20. It wasn't even like they lost the football game outright. They lost 37-17 against the Houston Texans. And again, the offense wasn't able to register much against that Texans side. So, Scott, I think if you're looking at the AFC South right now, I understand still making Jacksonville the favorite, off to a 1-2 start this year. The rest of the division, long-term, still not sensational. But the Jags have been wildly disappointing to start off this season.
Yeah, they really have. And you know that now they play the first of their back-to-back England games. So they got Atlanta and then Buffalo next week. You know, if they don't beat Atlanta, you know, you could easily make a case they'll lose to Buffalo. They could open up 1-4. You know, before then they play the Colts again the following week. And the other thing, you know, I watched a little bit of that game, as I watch all these games, as we all do. But I don't know if you noticed, Ben, there was nobody, I mean nobody, in the stands for that game against the Texans. And I get it, it's the Texans, but when you're playing two less home games because you're playing, or one less home game anyway because you're playing overseas, and all the euphoria this offseason and the hype and the hope for Jacksonville, and then I'm watching that game, and the stadium was literally half empty. No exaggeration, half empty. So I don't know what's going on in Jacksonville. You know, you're right, they were down against the Colts. They scored a touchdown to take the lead, then they scored, it wasn't a defensive touchdown, but it was like a Colts turnover late in the game that gave the Jags a short field. They scored a touchdown, they win by 10. Looks like it's going away, as you mentioned, but really that was a close game. Lay an egg against Kansas City and was embarrassingly bad last week against the Texans. So maybe it's just another example, whether it's the Giants, whether it's Seattle, whether whoever it may be, you know, the surprise teams from last year. We talked all offseason. How are they going to do this upcoming season when they're the target versus the, you know, the hunter versus the huntee? And so far, they've not played well.
Yeah, let's welcome in our Sports Grid Radio audience on Sirius XM as well. Channel 159, that's the home on Sirius XM, channel 159 for Sports Grid Radio. And Scott, it wasn't like Jacksonville was a world beater last year, right? They finished a game above 500. They won their final five to come back after Tennessee, you know what, down their leg to lose that divisional crown last year. For Jacksonville to win that title in the AFC South and then enter this year as the preseason favorites. And I don't think, Scott, Jacksonville is going to finish the year with a losing record, sub 500. I do think the Jags are still going to win in this division. But again, it is a different scenario when you are the huntees and not the or when you are the hunted and not the huntees anymore. And that's really the difference, Scott, where Jacksonville finds themselves at least at this moment. But you would expect to at least win a football game outright as an 8.5-point favorite, in which they were last week against the Texans. But Scott, the AFC South has so many weird divisional rivalries and series histories that take place. For instance, the Houston Texans had beaten Jacksonville 9 consecutive times up until the season finale between the two last year, week number 17, in which Jacksonville blew out the Texans. But now that's 10 of the last 11 for Houston over Jacksonville. Crazy in terms of how things work out there. The Jags, by the way, in London, a home field event. Scott Wetzel for the Jaguars. This is about to be their 10th NFL London game on Sunday early against the Atlanta Falcons. The Jags a 3-point favorite.
Yeah, you know, just as I was saying, there was nobody there in Jacksonville. They might be the only team that actually will have more fan support playing over in London than they will in their own stadium. I mean, that's how often they go over there, and that's, you know, how bad the fan base is down in Jacksonville with this club. So, yeah, kind of a litmus test, too, last week, which they failed. You know, you play a monster game against the defending champs, the Kansas City Chiefs. All right, you lose. Really good teams, Ben, find a way to get up back on Matt and win that next game. Maybe it's not pretty, but you know what? You find a way to get to win because you realize there's 15 more games left in the season. The mediocre teams, they fail those big-time spots, and they don't get back up the following week as Jacksonville did in last week against the Texans. So it's a huge game for them this week against the Falcons.
Completely so. Both teams disappointing, Scott, to your point. The Falcons, I'm not nearly as high on as some are, or maybe even were, after a perfect 2-0 start. I need to see something out of Jacksonville, even early on a Sunday across the pond in London. We'll come back on Football Full Circle. Take an early look at week number 4. That's next here on FFC.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Scott Wetzel and Ben Stevens.
We are back live right here on FFC. Scott, the great thing about Wednesday in the National Football League, not only practice reports coming out to get you ready for a new game week, it's also eve of game week and game day Thursday night in Lambeau between the Green Bay Packers and the Detroit Lions. Scott, this a rematch of last year's regular season finale, the final game of the 2022 regular season, week number 18, to end everything out. It was also the end of the Aaron Rodgers era in Green Bay. The Pack needed just a win outright over the Lions to get into the playoffs. Detroit pulls the upset, keeps Green Bay from the postseason, ending Aaron Rodgers' time at Lambeau. Now it's not Aaron Rodgers, of course, it's Jordan Love making his debut in front of the home faithful last week, and now that he has taken on the leading role as the quarterback for this Packers organization. It wasn't pretty early on, Scott, down 17-0 midway through the third, but then they bounced back in the final quarter and a half to win 18-17, did the Packers over the Saints. The Lions were at home last week, Scott, and they finally got a home win, booked as a favorite, hammering the Falcons, like we discussed earlier, 20-6, easily covering as a 3.5-point favorite. And Scott, it's the Lions, a very slight favorite, laying 1.5 tomorrow night in Lambeau on a Thursday night to start off week number 4. Let's start there, Scott. We talked about the Jacksonville Jaguars. Now the hunted, not the huntee. Similar story for Detroit. They are going to be booked as a favorite in a good majority, 65-70% of their games this year, including this one, Scott. 1.5 on the road in Lambeau is the right side favorite, although it's a very short spread, is the right side favorite tomorrow night on Thursday.
I'm surprised they are. You know, whether they should be or not, or ultimately who wins the game, you know, should be the favorite in this one, you would think, although the Packers won last week as 1.5-point underdogs. Point favorites and didn't cover, but I'm a little surprised that Detroit is, you know, just because it is Green Bay, you know, they are at home, you know, they are 2-1, it realistically could be 3-1. They blew a double-digit lead fourth quarter against Atlanta. You know, it was Aaron Rodgers, Brett Favre-esque, you know, with Jordan Love last week. First three quarters, I mean, they were just awful. That same defense as it's been all year just dominated. Packers even had a chance to kick a field goal to make it 17-3. They go for it. They don't get it. So it was really three more possessions even after that where they just rallied and just played great football for the final quarter. So maybe that's why they're just not buying into Green Bay. But little surprise that Detroit is the road favorite. Another step, right, for the Detroit Lions in their, you know, progression to being really taken seriously, being a road favorite Thursday night at Green Bay. And you know the Packers, I know Rodgers is not there, right, but you know the Packers, right, other players got to be ticked off after what happened last year in that last game.
Yeah. No doubt. I will be interested today, Scott, to see who's out there on the practice field for Green Bay. Of course, it's a very short week. The Packers were at home last week. That should give them some added benefit in getting ready for this one. Not a ton of travel from Detroit, Michigan to Green Bay, Wisconsin, but still the Lions have to make the trip on a short week. And who's going to be out there for this Green Bay side offensively? Christian Watson says he hopes to be out there for his season debut. Aaron Jones has missed the past 2 weeks for Green Bay after a sensational opener for the Pack against the Chicago Bears. There are no rushing yards props out just yet, Scott, for anybody outside of Jordan Love. 15.5. He had 39 a week ago in the comeback effort for Green Bay. I will be interested to see who leads the way tomorrow night offensively for Green Bay, and need to see that practice report today to get some better clarification.
Yeah, you know, and playing a Thursday game and then their next game, they're not the only team that does this. I mean, the NFL's a little weird with their schedule. It shouldn't be that difficult, but they don't play again until the following Monday. So they even get the 2-3 extra days this week, and then they get one more extra day before they have to play again. I say that because if you're, you know, if you're 50-50 on a guy playing, boy, it's got to be real tempting just to say, you know what, let's give the guy basically 2 weeks, week and a half, before, you know, we have to play our next game. And then even after that, they got the bye week. So if they really wanted to be conservative, they could. Detroit Lions, I'll say this about Jared Goff. You know, he's had his critics, me being one of them over the years. Most profitable quarterback, Ben, against the spread the last 5 years. 41-24-1. Lions 2-1 against the spread this year. 11-2 their last 13 dating back to last year.
A great point, Scott. The only thing I would say in that, and I think everybody knows this, is when you evaluate the Detroit Lions, a lot of those games booked as an underdog.
Dogs.
Only been favored,
right,
Scott, 7 times since Dan Campbell became the head coach at the start of the 2022 season. They are now both 4-3 straight up and against the number when booked as a favorite. Again, that is going to be what is expected of the Lions the rest of the way. Scott, I also think it's fascinating, right, given where the NFC North is so far this season. Detroit 2-1, Green Bay 2-1, the Vikings a hapless 0 0-3. The Chicago Bears, the worst 0-3 football team maybe we've ever seen. An unmitigated disaster, at least at this point, so far throughout the 2023 NFL season. The Lions still the favorite, Scott, in the NFC North, even money plus 100. The Packers only 45 cents back, plus 145. Then the Vikings at 6-1, the Bears at 25-1. Scott, you can consider the NFC North a two-team race between the two teams we will see in Lambeau tomorrow night.
No, I'm going to keep the Vikings in there at 6-1. You know, I know they're 0-3 and they're not looking good, and they lost two home games. So, and the NFC this year only has the 8 home games. The AFC has the 9, so they're really, really behind the 8 ball. But I still think they're a pretty good football team. A couple of breaks, obviously, here and there. A lot of teams can say this. I get it. But I would not limit them to just be in that division anyway, to be in a two team. I'm going to keep Minnesota in there. You know, they play the Lions twice, they play the Packers twice, so that they have a chance to, you know, make some moves and gain some ground. So no, I think it's a three horse, right? And I think Vikings at 6-1 is, you know, not a bad little play, a couple of shekels, a little hunch play on that. It's a big number for a division race.
It's so funny, Scott, when you look at Minnesota, right? 0-3 to start this season. And yet, Scott, we did this today on the early line. It stands out dramatically so. Kirk Cousins leads the National Football League in passing yards and passing touchdowns, 1,075-9. Justin Jefferson, the league's leading receiver. He is 1 yard away, Scott, against the LA Chargers last week. He had 149 from becoming the first NFL wide receiver in the history to have 150 receiving yards in each of the first three games. Danielle Hunter has 5 sacks, second most in the National Football League, only behind T.J. Watt, who has 6 for Pittsburgh. So, Scott, they have the leading passer in the National Football League, the leading wide receiver, one of the best edge rushers in the NFL at this current moment, and are 0-3. Now, Scott, we expected regression for Minnesota. At least the odds makers did. Not going to be a 13-win team again. 11 of those 13 wins coming in single-score games, in which the Vikings were 11-0 in one-score games. Scott, not only are they 0-3 this year, but all three losses in one score games. It is completely turned on its head in Minneapolis at the moment.
It is amazing. I'll go one step further with this Kirk Cousins thing, Ben. You realize he's 25th all time, not active, 25th all time in passing yards. He's 20th in passing touchdowns. I say he's 7th in passer rating, whichever rating you want to figure out, but I'll just throw it out there because it has it on Football Reference. He's 7th all time. The guy is going to be a Hall of Famer, believe it or not, you know, numbers-wise anyway, unless they just say, you know what, we're not putting him in. But he's going to finish. He's nowhere close to being done, right? He's going to finish in the top 10 in all these categories. You're looking at a Hall of Famer, but would you ever say that watching him play? No, because this last game was the dichotomy. This is just Kirk Cousins to a T. If you didn't watch the end of the game, real quickly, they made a play with 30 seconds left, and he wasn't smart enough to spike the football. The next play didn't come until 12 seconds left, which was the interception. Yeah. What are you doing, Kirk? Spike the ball.
Yeah. I mean, to a T was that Minnesota Vikings game against the Chargers. Scott, we'll talk about the Vikes up next. We're going to get ugly here on Football Full Circle with the 4 winless teams remaining in the National Football League who all play each other week 4. We'll talk about it next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Scott Wetzel and Ben Stevens.
We are back live right here on FFC. All right, Scott Wetzel, you ready to get into the mud? You ready to get down and dirty with some of the worst teams the National Football League has put out onto the field this year? Because here we go. Week 4, Scott, with 4 winless teams still remaining in the NFL. The Chicago Bears, the Denver Broncos, the Carolina Panthers, and the Minnesota Vikings. Week 4 is the epitome of ugly, because all four of these winless teams will play one of the other winless teams. It's the Bears and the Broncos, I believe, in Chicago. Let me check that real quick. Yeah. But it's the Bears and the Broncos at Soldier Field in Chicago. Goodness gracious, that's going to be a slop fest. And it's the Vikings and the Panthers in Charlotte. Scott, let's start with the Bears and the Broncos. 3.5 is the spread in favor of Denver. An over-under at 46. Somebody just scored a touchdown. I think the over-under is going to be up to 53. I'm going to take the over in this football game because, Scott, both defenses stink. The Chicago Bears are the worst scoring defense in the National Football League this year. Chicago has lost 13 consecutive games, giving up 25 or more points per game to their opponent in that 13-game span. And I don't think we need to highlight what happened to the Broncos last Sunday, but they did allow 70 points for only the fourth time in NFL history to the Miami Dolphins. So I think the over comes into play, Scott, and not because it's a great football game, just because both of these teams are atrocious.
They really are. They really one more pathetic than the other, right? You want trends? Trends also say over. Denver 7-1 over last 8 games, obviously dating back to last year. Bears 11-3 over dating back to last year. Although the Bears games are going over not because the Bears are scoring, it's because of their defense, which has been their mark, right, over the last 40 years. Their defense has been awful, and their offense has been even worse. They haven't scored Ben more than 20 points in 9 straight games. I mean, 20 points is, we're not talking 30 or 40. 20 is the average number you need to win, right? At least, which is why they're, you know, losing all these games. 1-10 against the spread are the Bears last 11 games. I mean, to go 9 straight games without scoring 20 points, wow. Their last win came last October 24th. Pick your poison, you know. Denver, Russell Wilson, 1-9 straight up his last 10 road games. I mean, does somebody have to win, or can we pick this for to end up in a tie?
Yeah. I mean, what a beautiful thing it would be if it was a tie. That would just be sensational. A tie at 23-23-2 and a push on the over-under, that would be sensational. Scott, pick your poison was the appropriate verbiage there for this football game, because that's what it's going to feel like watching it. The Denver Broncos, a 3.5-point favorite. I don't believe, Scott, the Broncos should be laying 3.5 against anybody. So far this year, they have lost outright as at least a field goal favorite in both of their opening 2 games at home in Mile High. But then again, I'm not sure the Bears should be getting less than a touchdown against anybody. Scott, you asked me the question yesterday about Justin Fields. Is it over already for Fields? It has to be in Chicago, I would say, right? Is it going to be elsewhere in his time? Drafting Fields and Trubisky in the last 6 years, or Darnold and Wilson was the question at the end of yesterday's show. I've been a Justin Fields believer. I guess technically I still am a Justin Fields believer in his individual talent, not in this situation in Chicago. Something's gotta give here. If the Bears can't score 25 in this matchup against the Broncos, something is certainly wrong. I don't know if I'm actually going to bet this game. It's disgusting, Scott, so maybe it stays away. If you had to give the edge, Scott, of course, Denver is a 3.5-point favorite. Somebody more than likely, unless there is a tie, has to win this football game. If you had to give the edge, even if it's 50.1 as opposed to 49.9, Scott, who do you think comes out with the first win of the year?
I'm going to go with Denver, you know, because they played so bad last week. Not that the Bears played great, down 41-0, right? They scored a couple of points there in the fourth quarter. But, you know, it's a character thing now with the Denver Broncos, right? You give 70 points if, you know, and Sean Payton's a good head coach. I don't think he's great, but if those players don't look themselves in a mirror, I think Denver is better than Chicago on paper. Russell Wilson certainly is better. You know, say what you want about him now, but he's better than Justin Fields. So I don't know if I'd be laying 3.5. You're right about that. But I think Denver ends up winning the football game.
Yeah. I mean, you have to give the edge to the Broncos. Scott, if the Denver Broncos lose this football game, what happens? What happens in Denver with all that is invested in Russell Wilson, a five-year, $245 million contract given to him before 2022 with the multiple first-round draft picks that were traded to Seattle in exchange for a former cook that now looks like the worst line chef you would ever see at a fast food restaurant? All that you gave up to get Sean Payton, too. And I think that's lost in the conversation. It's probably not correct. But they had to trade away draft capital to get Sean Payton because he retired with contract, with still years on his contract in New Orleans. It wasn't like here was this guy out of coaching for a few years, working for Fox, and they just picked him up off the street. They had to trade away draft capital. There is so much invested in the two most important positions for a football organization, quarterback, head coach, for Denver, Scott, that if this is a disaster yet again, like last year's 5-12 season was, I don't know what you do. You're going to take a large cap hit. You're going to reinvest everything and try to figure out what's moving forward. I think Russell Wilson, despite the large amount of money and the over $160 million guaranteed, Scott, is still more expendable than that of Sean Payton at this moment. But if the Broncos somehow lose this game in Chicago on Sunday, oh boy, it might be time to tear everything down even after week number four.
Yeah, and that's why I think, Ben, they're the worst team in all the situations, right? Jets with Aaron Rodgers, you know, you paid them a lot of money this year, but you're not losing the number one draft choice. So if they implode, they go 3-14, we'll just say that they have the number one pick. They can start all over again when they realize Zach Wilson's not any good. Bears, same thing. You know what? If Justin Fields isn't it, not only do the Bears have their own draft choice, they actually have Carolina's, don't forget, from last year, the trade up. Maybe you can even trade Justin Fields and get, I don't know if you're getting number one for him, but you could probably get, you know, something for him. So they're in a position to reload. The one team that's not is the Denver Broncos, because of what you just said. They're trading away all those draft choices, locking themselves up for Russell Wilson. I think they're in the worst spot out of all NFL teams. Even Arizona has their own, and they got Houston Texans draft choice, right? And if they wanted to trade Kyler Murray, maybe you could get a number one. I mean, Arizona really could reload. So it's Denver that's kind of stuck behind the eight ball.
Yeah. Scott, there's a lot of former NFL quarterbacks that are now working in media in some form or fashion that have come out to defend Justin Fields, right? And take that with a grain of salt. But we saw Chase Daniel, now working for CBS, break it down the other day, blaming pretty much the offensive scheme for Chicago, the inability of the wide receivers and the talent around him to make any plays downfield, a lack of even options for Justin Fields to throw the football to. Kyle Slaughter, a former NFL quarterback, now doing some great breakdown work and video work, actually, in terms of the evidence, was going into the game, going into what he watched at Justin Fields, and said himself, Scott, on social media earlier today, he had every intention to be like, no, man, Justin Fields just isn't it right now at the NFL quarterback position. But then watched the game back in the all 22, where you can see the entirety of the field, and said for 90% of the game, Justin Fields doesn't even have an open soul to try to get the ball to, let alone actually make the throw if they are open. So yeah, whatever reason, we're not going to, you know, place blame or do whatever here, but for whatever reason, the situation is not good in Chicago. And if Justin Fields is still there, it doesn't mean there's going to be any more success. Or if Justin Fields leaves, it doesn't mean that Chicago finds it better, greener pastures on the other side, or that Justin Fields does. But I think we can say with certainty, Scott, something right now in Chicago is broken for this Bears team, and it's got to change fast. If it doesn't, sweeping changes coming to Chicago this offseason. The other winless matchup, Scott, that we have in Carolina on Sunday, it's the Vikings and the Panthers. Aptly so for the Vikes. They're a 3.5-point road favorite in Charlotte. Scott, we're not sure as of yet what Bryce Young's status is going to be for this game, but the Panthers didn't look half bad under the leadership of Andy Dalton last week in Seattle.
Yeah, they put a bunch of points on the board. It's the one time the defense kind of failed them, right? Giving up 37 points when everything was said and done. But they scored enough, 27. So I would think Dalton would get the start. Again, you don't want to risk things with Bryce Young. Why take any chance whatsoever? But the season is on the line, right, for both these clubs. Neither team is going to be able to rebound from 0-4 and make the postseason, not even in the NFC. Yeah. There'd be no reason to have that kind of hope. So little surprise Vikes are that big of a favorite, especially not not knowing the quarterback situation with Carolina. If Dalton does play, I give them a better chance of winning. You know, short term, he is the better of the two quarterbacks, right? But, you know, this is the long-term picture you want for Carolina, not short term. So I wouldn't bet that until I found out who exactly going to be at quarterback for the Panthers.
Yeah. We saw it last week, Scott. Carolina was an early 6.5-point dog on the road in Seattle. Bryce Young was then ruled out. Andy Dalton became the starter. They took off the hook. It was 6. Again, still a pretty lofty spread, but there was a degree of belief in the veteran presence that is Andy Dalton that maybe the Panthers could stay a little bit more competitive in the football game, and they didn't end up covering, as Seattle won by 10, 37-27, but they made it a pretty fair fight for the first three quarters or so. I'm not going to bet the Vikings, Scott, to cover a number at any point until I see them start to win football games. I think it's going to be around a single score. Once again, the odds have pretty much been that way for the Vikings each and every moment this year. I will be looking at the props, though, because, Scott, there's only one team in the National Football League that has thrown the ball on 70% or more of their plays this year, and it's Minnesota. And they're not at like 70.2. 74.5% of the Vikings' plays this year have been through the air. The ground game, non-existent. But Kirk is going to chuck it all over the yard. I'd keep an eye on his pass attempts prop for Sunday in Charlotte. A few more NFL thoughts before we transition over to college football. We'll have that discussion up next here on Sports Grid Radio.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Scott Wetzel and Ben Stevens.
We are back live right here on FFC. It is Football Full Circle, all a part of the Sports Grid Radio Network. So, Scott, as we look at week number 4 of this NFL season, a couple of games that I think are going to be very impactful that we'll look back on this opening month and maybe put a pin into throughout the rest of this season. One, a divisional matchup in Cleveland between the Browns and the Ravens, 2-2-1 teams in the AFC North. The other in Nashville, but also featuring an AFC North team, the Bengals, a 2.5-point road favorite in Tennessee against the Titans. Those two 1-2 teams. And Scott, I think the interesting thing there, starting with Cincinnati, is how do they continue to build on some of the momentum they found in the second half last week against LA? Because it's great that they didn't start 0-3 and they got their first win of the year, but they now need to start stacking up wins the rest of the way, even in these spots where it's less than a field goal, but they're still slightly favored on the road in Nashville.
Yeah. So it's almost like this week, Ben, is like separation Saturday. You know, who's going to go to 2-2? Who's falling to 1-3? Obviously a monster swing, right? Not that you can't overcome 1-3, but you're behind the eight ball. You go to 2-2, you build a little momentum. You know, you feel good. Most divisions don't have an undefeated team leading the way. So, you know, you're only a game or two back, and then you got the whole season. The outlook is so much different from being 1-3. And that's the case with these two teams. You know, I thought Tennessee was going to be a little bit better than what they've shown so far. I believe in Ryan Tannehill coming back this year, so it's a huge, huge game for them. And then obviously, as we talked about with Cincinnati, you know, yesterday, you know, them being able to win, it wasn't pretty, wasn't great, but okay, it's a long, long season. You don't want to peak too soon anyway. I'm more concerned about, you know, the short week for Burrow and his health and being able to stay up, you know, with Tennessee's defense being pretty good. So I think Cincinnati's going to find a way to win. I think they are the better of the two teams. Got them going to the AFC Championship game, laying only 2.5 on the road. Yeah. Anything less than a field goal, I'll take and just say, all right, just win the football game, and I think they're going to win.
Yeah, Scott, when you look right now at Cincinnati, right, still slow to start offensively. They haven't scored a point or a touchdown, rather, in the first half so far this year. But the Bengals can bank on the fact they've been playing pretty good defense. However, on the ground, people have been running it on Cincy, giving up nearly 151 yards per game. Not so much last week against LA, but against Baltimore 2 weeks prior and against the Cleveland Browns week number one. Scott, that is going to be a test for this Bengals side, of course, because when you play the Titans, it's Derrick Henry and it's the rookie out of Tulane, Tyjae Spears now as well. That's where the Bengals are going to be tested. Only allowing 71 last week against the Rams, but LA was looking to throw it a decent amount, and that allowed allowed Lou Anarumo to really dial up that pressure on Matthew Stafford. It will be interesting to see the game plan now for the Bengals defensively against the Titans team, Scott, that's 1-2 this year. Not much is expected. Still running the football, still doing what they do, focusing on the defensive side of it. But the Titans had a miserable time last weekend against the Browns, another AFC North team trying to score. They only scored 3 points.
Yeah, they had not looked good. You know, even against the Chargers, the one that they won 2 weeks ago, they were losing most of that game. And if not for the Chargers being the Chargers, the Tennessee would be 0-3 right now. And offensively, they looked as bad as you could look last week against the Browns, whether it's botching the field goal try before the first half, not putting really anything together. Derrick Henry, I think he had 11 carries for 20 yards, crazy numbers for Derrick Henry. So this is going to be the little soul searching, right? Because no doubt in Nashville this week, they're all going to be talking about how Derrick Henry only had 11 carries for 20 yards, whatever, something similar. I think it was 11 for 20. So I'm expecting like a full, 20-plus carries. Let's see the Bengals defense. If they're struggling against the run, you know what, let's pound them. And if they can stop our run, then so be it. But that's what I'm expecting in this football game. But I do think the Bengals laying 2.5, they're much better than Tennessee. I like Tennessee, yeah. Ben, but they're not on the same class as Cincinnati, I don't think.
Yeah. Could be a short number when you look back at it for Cincinnati. The fact they're laying less than a field goal, you got to think the Bengals can win this football game at least by 3, maybe more than that. Might be a short number when we look back at week number 4. 2.5 points, got also the spread in favor of the Browns as they host the Ravens on Sunday in the land. Again, we talked about this briefly yesterday, Scott. At the end of week number 4, this will be the third divisional game Cleveland has already played. That means by the end of week number 4, the Browns have already played half of their AFC North games in 2023. They won the opener against the Bengals. They lost week number 2 against the Steelers. If they beat the Ravens here, Scott, not only would that be a 3-1 start for Cleveland, better than I think a lot of people would expect it in the first month, but also 2-1 in division, knocking off the Ravens, that could be incredibly beneficial down the home stretch of this season. So a big game on Sunday in Cleveland.
Oh, absolutely. And not only for the division, but just for a wild card spot, right? If they end up not winning the division, but the next, head to head, and then it goes to AFC conference record, so that they would have 3 games up if they were able to win this one. So big game, good defense, right? They've been riding on the defense. The one game they haven't missed Chubb with the backfield that they have going right now. Browns 8-2 under their last 10. Baltimore 13-5 under their last 18. I'm more curious to see what Baltimore's going to do. I mean, the way they lost that game, they had 7 starters not play against the Colts. Still, you got to find a way at home to beat the Indianapolis Colts with a backup quarterback. And John Harbaugh, the way they botched the end of that game, or at least end of regulation, by not telling the kick returner to not fair catch the ball, which forced them to run a play before the 2-minute warning, is just, that's high school football mistake. I mean, call a timeout. And then the Colts, by the way, they're not kicking an onside kick. It was like one bad coaching decision after another. They're going to kick the ball deep, even though they only got 1 timeout. Why not the onside kick? Even you could do that. But anyway, I think Baltimore finds a way to win. I think they rallied the troops. I think they were embarrassed last week. They get some players back, and the Cinderella run for Cleveland, it gets a little bit of a hiccup this week.
Yeah, the Browns, the best scoring defense so far, allowing less than 11 points per game, 10.7 on average. Scott, I'm going to have to change my tune on Cleveland if they win this football game against the Ravens. We talk about how Wednesday is a vital day in the weekly NFL calendar because you get those practice reports. You see teams back on the field for the first time as they get ready for a new opponent on Sunday. The Ravens are going to be a team to follow all week long, Scott, and until things maybe change in terms of health, maybe all year. You got to get Ronnie Staley back. You got to get Tyler Linderbaum back to do what you want offensively. Lamar Jackson probably can't be your leading rusher, as he has been twice now in 3 games all year long. And you would hope there's more options on the outside for Lamar. There is talent in place. Odell, Zay Flowers has looked good. Of course, Mark Andrews is reliable. But the offense outside of week number two in Cincinnati, hasn't grooved all that much just yet. And defensively, Scott, defensively, you got to hope the Ravens remain healthy as well, because I think at full strength, when the secondary is fully filled out, you have a great linebacking core led by Roquan Smith, where it allowed the Ravens to be top 10 last year after Roquan was acquired from Chicago, really being an anchor in the middle of that defense. If that's going to be more of a defensive slugfest here, Scott, maybe I look at the under in that game, but it is just 40 and a half, pretty minimal to begin with. All right, Scott, let's transition to college football here for the last few minutes of this show. News out of Michigan State today, news we all expected and even further anticipated after the report last week. Michigan State, who last week told Mel Tucker that they were intending on firing him for cause from the head coaching position in East Lansing, made that decision formal today, handing Mel Tucker his firing notice on this Wednesday, Scott, officially ending the Mel Tucker era in East Lansing. They will look for a new head coach as the offseason begins and as that coaching carousel starts to spin in early December. But Mel Tucker's time, Scott, has come to a close at Michigan State. He has been fired with cause by Michigan State Athletics.
Yeah, and now the lawsuits begin, right? You can say what you want about whether he should be fired or not, because he wasn't a very good head coach. A couple of years ago, they had a great year, surprising year, got this monster, ridiculous 10-year contract. He's got $79 million left on this contract as they try and fire him because this relationship phone call that he had with this woman, it's a he said, she said. You can believe who you want to believe, but the bottom line is he's not going to go away quietly, and then Michigan State's going to try and get away from that contract. Boy, Michigan State, whether all the issues they have had over the last few years with the sexual scandals that they've been having to deal with, and this is just one more on top of it all. So this is going to be real ugly for Michigan State. I imagine somewhere along the line, they'll meet somewhere in the middle. You know, maybe he'll get $50 million, $40 million, whatever it'll be. But he's not going away quietly, and the state and the school's not trying to, you know, have to pay him $79 million either. So, yeah, just a bad situation in Michigan State.
No doubt. Scott, you look at your university leaders, right? Your athletic department leaders as the people supposed to do that. Lead, supposed to guide, supposed to have a direction for a program, a university, and a community. That has not been the case in East Lansing over the past 5 years with these very serious off the playing surface type things. And when it comes down to this situation for Mel Tucker, Michigan State's ultimate conclusion, as the Title IX investigation will still play out with a hearing scheduled, Scott, for the opening weekend in October, Michigan State's ultimate conclusion here as for the job status of Mel Tucker really doesn't have much to do with do you consider the relationship inappropriate or not with Brenda Tracy that Mel Tucker had, and if it will be eventually deemed sexual assault and sexual misconduct. It's more so, Scott, that Mel Tucker had what was an inappropriate personal relationship with a professional who the university, led by Mel Tucker, had done business dealings with. And Mel Tucker has not denied that any of those things have taken place, any of the instances that have been filed here. And as Michigan State Athletic Director Alan Haller had to say, Scott, in this dismissal, specifically, the university terminated Tucker's contract for his admitted and undisputed behaviors, which have brought public disrespect, contempt, and ridicule upon the university and constitute a material breach of his agreement in moral turpitude. So that is what they are going with here, Scott, as their reason for firing with cause. And thus, when you fire with cause, that 10-year, $95 million deal that Mel Tucker signed at the end of 2021, you do not need to pay out the remainder of that buyout. Mel Tucker, of course, is going to sue and have his own litigation against Michigan State. He wants to see his money. He knows that is going to be the case, and going through litigation is the proper way of doing that on his end of things. But it's a disaster, Scott, for this Michigan State football program, for this Michigan State community. There is no other way of describing it as such. And I do really feel for the locker room, Scott, that came to play for Mel Tucker and the reinvigoration. He was trying to make an update this Michigan State football program that had great success under Mark D'Antonio. But as the years evolved at MSU, they needed a boost of energy. Mel Tucker did that for this program at a certain time. And the players in the locker room, Scott, who now, by the way, have a 30-day transfer portal window because a head coach was fired. We'll see how many use it, if anybody at all. But these players committed to go to Michigan State to play for this one man, trying to turn around a football program and bring them back to days of success. And the individual, I would deem it inappropriate behavior of one man in Mel Tucker, has now allowed these kids and these student athletes that are there to kind of figure out and be caught up in this upheaval of what will happen moving forward. We'll come back on Football Full Circle in just a few minutes to wrap up today's show and take an early look at the final Saturday in September for college football. That's next on FFC.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Scott Wetzel and Ben Stevens.
We are back live right here on FFC for just a few more minutes. Scott, last Saturday in college football was one of the most significant we had seen in 2023, or perhaps over the last five or so years. Six ranked versus ranked matchups and some great games all Saturday long. This doesn't have necessarily that same feel, Scott, but week number five is going to be a big one. Three ranked versus ranked games on Saturday. A top 20 tilt in the Pac-12 Friday night live in Corvallis in Oregon between the Beavs of Oregon State and the Utes of Utah. And Scott, a game on Saturday that is going to draw all the eyeballs one more time, maybe for the final time, in Boulder. It's Colorado, who has now fallen outside of the top 25, hosting eighth-ranked USC. 21.5, Scott, the same point spread that it was last week for Colorado on the road in Oregon, is the number in favor of the Trojans here in Boulder. Scott, where do you think Colorado is right now? What is the assessment of these Buffs? If it is another blowout victory in favor of USC, what does that do to the overall thought on Colorado the remainder of this college football season?
You know, they got a couple of other big boys with the Pac-12 being so good this year, so they have another chance or two to kind of make their mark. But, you know, I'm okay with it. You know, I think they're going to play much better. I don't think they're going to win, but I'd be surprised if they got blown out again, especially at home. So, but this is like their last probable chance to, like, you want to think we're really one of the great, great teams, and I don't think anyone really believes that, but this is their chance to kind of stay in that possibility. Like I said, I think they're going to lose, but listen, it's still a good story. They got some winnable games. They need to win all those winnable games to become bowl eligible. I think they will. So the other big one, I'm looking forward to Ole Miss and LSU, because they can throw a wrinkle if Ole Miss wins that football game on who's going to win the West Division.
A de facto elimination game, Scott, maybe for the Bayou Bengals, if they suffer their second loss for their college football playoff contention hopes. And if Ole Miss goes down two straight Saturdays against two SEC West teams, are they out of the running for a conference championship? He's Scott Wetzel. I'm Ben Stevens. That does it today on FFC. We'll see you tomorrow at noon Eastern.